Welcome to the DLF Dynasty Podcast with your hosts, Dan Myler, Ryan McDowell, and Matt Price.
Yeah, we are the DLF Dynasty Podcast. I am Dan, that's Matt, over there is Ryan, and we are coming at you with episode 617 of the show. Of course, we are post-NFL draft for 2024. All these rookies have homes. We're excited about most of them, I would say, although disappointed with some as well. We're going to talk about every single one of them on this episode of the show. In fact, it's all rookies. For this episode, we'll focus on the veterans a week from now on episode 618. But before we get to any of these rookies, let's talk to the guys. Matt, I haven't seen you in like a day. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I think somehow, even though I'm the farthest away, I got home before pretty much all you guys, right? You guys had a long drive. I just had to get on a quick couple-hour flight, and I was back in San Diego before lunchtime.
Oh, my gosh. I wish it would be. Just driving through torrential downpours and can't see anything and pulling over on the side of the highway to check trade offers in a league.
Of course you were, of course.
How about you, Ryan? How was your drive home?
The dynasty life. I love it. The drive home was good. The weekend was good. Hanging out with you guys, watching the NFL draft together. I don't know if I want to talk about every single player that was drafted. Like you said, though, Dan, let's just talk about the good ones.
Yeah, let's talk about the good ones, right? We need to get to the good ones for sure. And there are a whole bunch of them. It certainly starts at the quarterback position, and that's going to be our topic in the startup. But the rest of the show this week, guys, is all about a mock draft. We're gonna revisit the mock from last week, try to identify the differences and what changed over the weekend, and specifically why guys dropped or added value. And we're gonna get to that all right now.
The startup.
I think the startup has to be the quarterbacks, right? Because we've never seen it before. Of the first 12 draft picks in the NFL draft are signal callers. And it's kind of unheard of. The first three picks go off the board. I think the way most people anticipated, with Caleb Williams to Chicago, Jaden Daniels going to Washington, and then Drake May, third overall to New England. That was kind of what we expected. But we really anticipated some changes after that. Maybe the Vikings trade up to try to get J.J. McCarthy. Maybe Bo Nix goes in the first round. Maybe Penix sneaks in there too. But Penix goes all the way up there at the 108. And like you guys said, we were all hanging out together. Ryan, you got, I think it was you, that got the tip or the pick tipped via Twitter. Thanks for that, whoever did that. And kept it quiet. You said it was going to be shocking. I don't think there's a dynasty manager, a football fan, a random casual Falcons fan that wasn't shocked when they saw Michael Penix goes eighth overall to the Falcons, Ryan.
Yeah, that was actually our buddy Eric who found out that yeah, pick okay. early. And he did tell us, as you said, that it was going to be a shocker. And we immediately start throwing out names, and you know, maybe it's Brock Bowers, and what does that do to Kyle Pitts? These are just the things running through our mind. Maybe it's Roma Dunze and adding another weapon there for Kirk Cousins. And nobody thought it might be Michael Penix. At least nobody in our house there, nobody in the dynasty community. I don't really think anybody in the draft community saw this one coming. And we mentioned our drives home from that trip this weekend. And on that drive home, I listened to, of course, multiple podcasts recapping the draft, recapping round one. And I heard a couple of our friends on different shows suggest that, given everything we know about Penix, given the Falcons situation, that this was actually the worst pick in NFL draft history. And I think I agree. I agree with that take. And I mean, again, given everything we know, and maybe Penix works out, but knowing what we know in the moment, the team's needs and their current situation, knowing some of the just some of the most basic concerns about Michael Penix, his age and his injury history alone are reasons not to to make this pick, but they did it.
Yeah, they did it, Matt. And you were just as shocked as the rest of us. Certainly, it feels like the pick heard around the world that everybody has an opinion of it. Do you share the same negative outlook, I would say, as Ryan?
I think it's bad. And you know what? Honestly, I wish we had hit the record button during our discussion about this and like the Jordan, how it compares to the Jordan Love situation. We're not going to get into that again. It got a little bit heated between the Packer fans. but this, to great. Me, this situation was a great discussion. It was fun. But this situation is it's just completely different. The opportunity cost of taking this guy in the top 10 when there are, do you want to win a Super Bowl or do you want to like wait for 3 years for this guy to develop? And I know there's different philosophies of that, but you know, they didn't have to take Romo Odunze there. They could have taken one of the top defensive players. They could have taken one of the top offensive linemen, whatever you want to help your team this year. But I just go back and keep thinking, like, we knew that the Bears were locked in on Odunze. If they had taken Romo Odunze to pair with Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Bijan Robinson for their new quarterback that they just spent $100 million on, like, that just feels a lot better than what they did here. I have seen some dynasty chatter today. People are talking about maybe it's not that bad for a dynasty pick. You know, what do you – I saw some chatter about do you want Michael Penix or a 2026 first? Because you're not going to start Michael Penix until 2026, so that's a quarterback for you in that particular class. I don't know. I'll pose it to you guys that way. Which one do you guys want, a 2026 first or Michael Penix? Because people are out there saying that this is basically the same thing. You're going to be waiting on these picks or this quarterback in either scenario. And this play, you get your quarterback for basically a value of a second round today, right?
Yeah, and maybe a late second round. I don't really subscribe to that theory. I honestly think that your league settings are going to determine whether you're interested in Michael Penix or not. If you're in a contract league, don't draft Michael Penix. If you're in a league with small roster sizes, you're not just giving up the draft pick for Michael Penix. You're also giving up a very valuable roster spot. So he's not very valuable. If you're in a league that you're not convinced is going to be around in 2026, don't draft Michael Penix, right? Yeah, there really is the perfect place to draft him. And I can get on board with picking him, especially if it's late second, even mid second round. But it has to be a stable league that you are convinced will be around, convinced you're going to be a part of. It has to be a non-contract league, because if you're burning up the first couple, 3 years of a contract, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And it absolutely has to be a league with bigger roster sizes where you can burn a spot on a quarterback that may not get on the field. So I think before considering him, you need to think twice about where your league is and where your roster is. I actually think maybe I like Michael Penix just a little bit more than I did last week, which is a shock. That doesn't mean necessarily that I think that was the right choice by Atlanta. I think as a dynasty manager, there's a little bit more appeal there, not only because he was picked in the top 10 where we didn't expect it. We'd have been more likely to say he's going to be the eighth pick in the second round than the eighth pick in the first round, right? So to get that kind of draft capital, that adds a lot. To hear that, Ryan, there were a few other teams considering him as a top 10 option. There were teams trying to trade into the top 10 to get him. That gives me some confidence that the NFL sees Michael Penix as a franchise quarterback. And the chance to get those kind of guys in the second round don't come around very often. So I would take a swing if your league settings say to.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Certainly in the second round, we will do our mock draft coming up soon. As we mentioned earlier, we'll see where he falls in that and if he's considered a riser or a faller based compared to last week's mock. I did see some early ADP. I'm not sure if this was based on mock drafts or actual rookie drafts that had Penix as a fringe first rounder. And I think if you're taking Michael Penix with the 111, the 112, the first couple of picks in the second round, I think you are doing the exact same thing that the Falcons did. You're taking him because he's a quarterback, because he might add future value to your team in a couple years. And I think that would be an equally poor decision by a dynasty manager to take him there. If he falls to the mid, late second, sure, shoot your shot. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so a handful of other quarterbacks go as well, or a handful of quarterbacks go, including J.J. McCarthy, who goes 10th overall. The Vikings trade up the one spot, seems to get good value there, comparatively to what most of us in the community thought they were going to move up drastically, perhaps even to the fourth pick overall to get McCarthy. That's a great landing spot. I'm not the biggest J.J. McCarthy fan, and I have a little bit of skepticism. But to have those weapons, whether it be the wide receivers that between Addison and Jefferson and then the tight end with Hockenson, they also added Aaron Jones into that backfield, that he's really set up for success. Even if he has to wait a month or two into the season to get his shot, he's going to be in a good really a good space to make some plays and potentially be a fantasy contributor. I think what holds me back with J.J. McCarthy is that we just haven't seen enough of it. He was never asked to be the man in that offense at Michigan, and that gives me a little bit of skepticism. He goes at 10 overall, seems to be settling in the middle of the first round in most Dynasty Superflex rookie drafts. Meanwhile, Bo Nix, who goes two picks later in the NFL draft to the Broncos and certainly has an opportunity to get on the field early. He doesn't have the same amount of weapons, but will get on the field right away. He's going towards the beginning of the second round in these Superflex rookie drafts. I'm wondering, Matt, do you have a preference here at cost? If you have to give the seventh or eighth pick for J.J. McCarthy or can wait till 13, 14, 15 to get Bo Nix, which one are you chasing?
Well, that for me, I think I'm going to go ahead and take Bo Nix at cost there. But I think the more interesting, maybe, I know he went way earlier in the NFL draft, but I think they're going almost back to back in our Superflex rookie draft. But the more interesting conversation to me is McCarthy and Drake May, because I'm seeing some chatter out there that McCarthy has passed him based on the situation. May has these two rookie receivers and Pop Douglas out there for him. And meanwhile, J.J. McCarthy's got, you know, the greatest receiver currently in the NFL and our 101 and one quarterback leagues, right? And Justin Jefferson and all those other weapons there, though. So I haven't moved McCarthy ahead of May personally, but I could see them being the same tier right now. I don't know how you guys feel about that one. Going back to Nix just real quick, I think the situation is not as bad as people are making out. We know that he has experience. We know he can come in there and be the day one starter. He started 61, 63 games in college football. He's not going to have this, he's going to have to learn the offense for sure, but it's not like he's going to go in there and be gun shy out there with the level of competition, in my opinion. You added Troy Franklin, who drops tremendously in the draft. So we like him a little bit less because of the draft capital, but you pair him with this quarterback who he was very comfortable with in college and a pretty much clear runway for target opportunity there. Once, you know, we'll see what happens with Cortland Sutton, but he and Mims look like the future starters as of this moment. So I don't mind taking Nix. I would rather take Nix, 202, 203, certainly well ahead of where I would take Penix at this point.
The thing with that, though, is Bo Nix gets the benefit of the coach, right? Sean Payton's there in Denver, handpicked Bo Nix, and whether you want to say, oh, he took what was left at the end of this tier of six quarterbacks or tier of three, maybe between 8 and 12 overall in the NFL draft. It really, there was a lot of smoke that maybe Denver was all in on Nix coming into the draft. So I can see where Sean Payton would fall in love with the guy that gets the ball out of his hands, makes good decisions with it, and is accurate. Even if a lot in the draft community, Ryan, might think, man, Bo Nix at 12, that's way too high. The draft said, if you want Nix, you better take him. And we all saw the depth chart in Denver going into the draft. They didn't have an NFL quarterback. Whether you think Bo Nix is or not, they shot their shot on him.
Yeah, I mean, I still have, you know, I still have some of the same concerns I had about Bo Nix entering the draft. I would say the same for J.J. McCarthy. I think what sets both of those guys apart from some of the other quarterbacks in the group is the coaching staff, as you pointed out there, Dan, with Sean Payton. I would say the same situation, maybe even better from a coaching standpoint, with McCarthy and Kevin O'Connell. I mean, I'm definitely not totally giving up on Sean Payton at this point as an offensive coach, but you know, maybe it feels like it's do or die when it comes to Sean Payton and Bo Nix. Like if this doesn't work out, they took him 12 overall. If he fails, you know, it feels like we could see Sean Payton just call it a career and get out of this situation.
One really interesting thing I was thinking about today is, like, at this time next year, if for some reason, I mean, it's I don't know, is it 50-50 that Bo Nix is successful? I'm not sure what the percentages are there. But if Bo Nix comes out and is terrible, and then Sean Payton decides, well, we're going to let this guy sit, cool off a little bit. We're going to bring in these veterans and maybe Bo Nix just isn't ready for this. Michael Penix could be worth more than Bo Nix this time next year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That could happen without a doubt. I'm not as skeptical maybe of Bo Nix and certainly not as skeptical of Payton and that regime in Denver. The cupboard is pretty bare for that team. And, you know, for the arrow to be pointing up, Bo Nix just has to be serviceable, maybe not to dynasty players and fantasy players. He just has to show some signs, honestly. I kind of think it's a relatively similar situation to that we saw a year ago in Tennessee. And, you know, they bring in a young quarterback and they try to get his feet wet, but the cupboard was bare. There weren't enough weapons. And you can say what you want about DeAndre Hopkins being there. And yeah, they had a running game, but it takes time to build these things up. So I'm going to give Bo Nix a longer leash maybe than some dynasty managers. I don't think the expectations are that high though. We're picking him at what, 15, 16 in rookie drafts in super flex leagues. He's probably going in the late third in some single quarterback leagues. So the investment is small, and to get any quarterback at that investment seems like something I'm willing to do. We're going to find out where Bo Nix and JJ McCarthy and Penix and all these other quarterbacks go in our DLF Dynasty podcast mock draft. We are simulating the same draft as we did a week ago. We'll talk about value changes, and let's get to that right now.
The DLF Dynasty podcast mock draft.
Yeah, like I said, we're going to do the same order as we did last week. So Ryan's going to kick things off. I'll be second and Matt will be third. Before we get to our mock, though, let's take a second to listen to our sponsor for this week's show. This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the guys over at DraftKings and that newest product that I've been talking about the last few weeks. It's called Pick 6. It's a pick-em style platform where you choose players to have more or less of a certain stat, things like passing yards, rushing yards, etc. But the twist that DK has made is that it's a peer-to-peer platform. So if you're contrarian and you outsmart your opponents, the winnings can be massive. It's also available in 21 states, including some that don't even have sports betting. I live in one of those states that don't allow sports betting, but Pick 6 is available. And I can tell you, I already love it, and I think you will too. So sign up using our link in the show notes, and you're going to get a brand new offer as the weather gets warmer and those Pick 6 offers start heating up with it. New customers can get an instant 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits. So check it out. Check out those show notes and sign up today. So as I said, Ryan has the number one pick. I assume nothing changed there, McDowell. Who you got at number one in this Superflex mock?
Yeah, nothing changed. We knew last week at this time that Caleb Williams was going to be the Bears pick at the top, and he was my pick. He remains my pick. The situation was already great, and it got even better as the Bears took two pass catchers and I'm sorry, one pass catcher and a offensive lineman with those first picks.
Yeah, yeah, things got way better as Adunze lands as the wide receiver 3 in Chicago. I mentioned that I did a trade or got a trade offer on my ride back. That was actually the trade offer. Somebody coming hot and heavy after Rome Adunze in a league that involves Devi. And Ryan, I called you on the phone. We had to talk it through a little bit. Got a Bears fan that needed some Rome and got that deal done. I gotta say, I'm pretty excited about both these rookies. As a Packer fan, that's hard to swallow. For these two to pair up with the rest of the weapons there in Chicago, that's a good situation. The offensive line certainly has some questions still. We'll see how that pans out. Got a new offensive coordinator in place as well. Certainly want to see Caleb Williams making those throws like he did at USC. I got the number 2 pick. I'm going to stay true to what I did a week ago as well. I don't think anything's changed. We all expected Marvin Harrison to go to Arizona at 4. That is indeed what happened. The question is, do you want the quarterback and Jaden Daniels or Marvin Harrison here? I think the truly elite alpha upside of Marvin Harrison, that washes away some of the maybe question marks that surround Jaden Daniels for me. I want that sure thing if I can get it. And I think there's a chance Marvin Harrison is the wide receiver 1 in Dynasty in real short order. I think that upside maybe exists with Jaden Daniels as well. There's just more question marks with him, so I'll take the safer bet with Harrison.
Yep, definitely fair. I totally get it. I mean, you can't argue with Harrison at 2. If somebody wanted to take him at 1 overall, I don't think anybody's going to have a serious complain about that, even in super flex. But for me, the quarterback 1 still is Jaden Daniels. So here at the 103, I know the floor is very scary. He could get hurt. He could, with his running style, I get all of that, but the ceiling is too tantalizing for me. I think he immediately becomes one of just 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the NFL that has the ability to throw for 4,500 yards and also rush for 1,000 yards in a season. He's a pretty easy pick for me here at 103.
Got to stay upright though to throw for 4,500 yards. And man, I'm still a little concerned about that standing and patting the ball and taking those sacks and the potential for him to get hurt doing all those things. I don't mind him at 3. Certainly has upside to be an elite option at the position. I still think those questions exist that have been there for so long though. Ryan, you're up at number 4 so far through 3 picks. Nothing's changed since last week.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, the top of the draft, you know, the first hour or so of the NFL draft, in some ways it seemed actually a little boring. There were no real surprises. Most of these players went to where they were regularly mocked, and because of that, the value of these players haven't changed. We're 3 for 3 as far as having the same picks as last week. I'm going to make that 4 for 4. I'll take Malik Nabers here at the 104, just like I did last week. Lands with the Giants, you know, not the landing spot we were necessarily excited about, but certainly one where he could be the top target for that offense right away.
Yeah, I like that pick. I certainly would have taken him here as well. He goes off at number 4. I'm up at number 5, and I'm going to stay true to what happened a week ago as well. I already talked about Rome Adunze, quality landing spot, got the draft capital that we're looking for attached to a quarterback that we're very excited about, certainly has elite upside. I think there are some dynasty managers, guys, that are worried about him being 3rd in the pecking order in that Bears offense. There's reason for those concerns. Adunze just has too much explosiveness, the ability to make big plays. I think the cream's going to rise to the top. And honestly, we don't have to wait forever for Adunze to start into that top 2. A year behind Keenan Allen, not the worst thing in the world. Let Keenan Allen run in the slot. He can take those outside reps. Learn from one of the best route runners in the league. Those are all things that we were hoping Adunze would get. He got them. So I don't see a reason to bump him down at all.
Yeah, I don't see a reason to bump him down at all. But I do think, for me personally, the gap is closed between him and my selection here at the 106, that Xavier Worthy. I just feel this nightmare scenario. Maybe it's because I had so much Jaxon Smith-Njigba from last year. I just feel like I see this scenario where we think he can probably carve out a role in year one. We know he has these two players ahead of them that are very good NFL players, but he's a very good prospect too, and he's going to be able to get on the field and carve it out. And I just don't know if I want to assume that again this year. Like, I don't want to get to a position where we're at right now with JSN, like we are with Rome Odunze, where we're wondering, is he that guy that we thought he was? JSN has lost a tremendous amount of value, I would say. So, Xavier Worthy here, I think it's the perfect landing spot. He was mocked to the Chiefs countless number of times over the weeks and the months leading up to the draft, and he provides them with a deep threat. They've been trying to fix that for years. They provide him with an underneath weapon. They've been trying to fix that with guys like Kadarius Toney. They're trying to fix the speed with guys like Marquise Valdes-Scantling, and it's just not working. But Worthy, I think, has risen to the point where he's going to be a locked-in starter for a lot of dynasty teams, even on day one, as soon as he steps on the field.
I had Worthy in this spot as well, and I think you made a good point there, Matt, that while he still hasn't maybe overcome Rome Odunze, he's closed that gap, certainly has for me. I had Worthy significantly lower in my rankings. He was towards the bottom of the first round rather than the right in the middle, where you take him here. You mentioned the parallels that to the situation in Seattle. Couple things about that. First of all, Keenan Allen already 32 years old. A year ago, Lockett was 30 years old. I know Keenan Allen is, to be honest, a better receiver than Tyler Lockett, but there is some something to be said about the difference in age there. Nevertheless, I really do think that Xavier Worthy, he did so much for his value. So, Ryan, I'm wondering, are you taking Worthy at six if you were on the clock?
Yeah, I think I probably would have. And, we all knew that Worthy would be the big riser pre-draft. He was linked or mocked to a couple of different teams regularly. And maybe this was just dynasty managers hoping that he would land with one of these teams that could really maximize his potential when it comes to speed and playmaking. The Chiefs, of course, were one of those, the Dolphins the other. So landing with one of those two teams, and I mean, it just maximizes his upside when it comes to value already, and I think it will maximize his upside when it comes to production as well. So yeah, I think this is where he belongs. He pushed a couple of other guys down. We had talked about that top tier or that tier break being seven deep. And I think it's a little deeper now because Xavier Worthy gained so much value. I've got the 107 pick. I'm going to go with the same player I took last week, actually, which is Drake May, the quarterback now of the Patriots. Again, some questions about that system. I do think a little bit of this analysis, by myself included, has been a little lazy. We're still talking about a new coaching staff here, and I know there's some crossover, some carryover from Belichick's staff, obviously. But I don't think just because the Patriots' offense has been terrible for 3 or 4 years that it has to be terrible moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, there are so many unknowns with that New England coaching staff, right? We still have to kind of unpack how they're going to run this offense. And when we think back on the 2023 New England Patriots, we think about the dysfunction on that the offensive side of the football, starting with that coaching staff and Belichick's decision to make those two defensive and special team coordinators offensive minds. That clearly did not work out. And that's all hanging in the back of our minds right now as we maybe prejudge this version of the Patriots and that offense. I don't think I'm quite as worried as a lot of dynasty managers are. I tend to have some faith in what's going on in New England. And I, as everybody knows, I'm a fan of Drake May, and I think he's going to surprise some people and take steps to make dynasty managers feel like he's a bargain in the middle to maybe even end of the first round, because so many of us are down on him and his upside now that he landed with the Patriots. I'm up at 108, and I'm actually going to stick with what I thought a week ago as well. I took Brian Thomas 7 days ago. I'm going to stick with him this week. He got enough draft capital for me to be excited about his upside. The LSU product looks like a guy that that could make an impact for Jacksonville now that Ridley's gone and there's an opportunity on the outside. Have a quarterback situation that we're at least good with, right? Trevor Lawrence. And while there are some questions about him and maybe if he'll reach his ultimate upside, he certainly can distribute the football and hit guys in stride. That's exactly what we're looking for with Brian Thomas. You think about Calvin Ridley's role a year ago, I'm pretty comfortable with Brian Thomas getting those targets. Those are the vacated ones that we're looking to fill. And certainly Brian Thomas looks like a guy that at 21 years old is walking into a situation where we should feel like he's going to get plenty of targets, even in his rookie year, to be productive, to get this kind of receiver at 8 overall. That feels pretty good. Matt, you're up with the next pick, though, at number 9 overall. I'm sure you're glad that a specific tight end fell.
Yeah, I'm going to take Bowers here. I think in most rookie drafts, he's definitely going after, I'll just say it, McCarthy is probably the player that's going to go here in most rookie drafts, maybe even a couple of spots ahead of this. But for me, Bowers, I know they drafted Michael Mayer last year. I don't really care. I just think Bowers is the better player. He's going to be better as the receiver. I think Mayer is going to be in line more often if they are going to run a lot of 12 personnel. And I mean, after Davante Adams, who has, I mean, maybe he has two more seasons, but I think we're probably only going to bank on one more for him. And then Jacoby Myers, there's nothing else in that passing game. And I know this isn't one of the, you know, preferred landing spots. A lot of people wanted to see him go to the Colts. I think people wanted to go see him to go to the Bengals, but this is a spot where he's going to have more opportunity, I think, than both of those situations. And I know the quarterback situation isn't good either, but Minshew, I think, is good enough to supply Davante Adams and Brock Bowers with fantasy goodness. So if it's Aiden O'Connell, they let him throw the ball all around the field that last season. So whether it's Minshew, whether it's O'Connell, I think that Bowers is going to be just fine here for fantasy. I think he's immediately a top, I mean, I'll say top 6 to 7 tight end in Dynasty. That might be too conservative.
I saw some value conversations between Brock Bowers, not between, but about Brock Bowers and Dalton Kincaid earlier today. I'd rather have Kincaid pretty easily. What about you guys? Oh, okay.
I think it's close. It's close. All right. I think they're probably back to back. I don't know where he is in my rankings right now, but I think I'll probably be back to back.
All right.
I paused because I wanted to hear Matt's answer before answering myself. I'm taking Kincaid for sure. But, you know, I've poured enough.
Who's the better prospect, regardless of situation?
Bowers is. I think he's the better prospect in general. But to trust Las Vegas to use a weapon correctly, I think there's an argument to be made that they don't even use Davante Adams the way they should, and they throw him a lot of targets, but they don't let him run routes like they should. Nevertheless, Ryan, you're up at number 10. It's kind of shocking, really. We're through 9 picks. Only 2 picks are different than a week ago. Xavier Worthy jumped 3 spots from 9 to 6. Brock Bowers, he dropped 3 spots from 6 to 9. So we've all drafted the exact same guys that we did a week ago, just Matt took 2 different guys in 2 different spots. Who's up at number 10? You going to stick with what you did a week ago with JJ McCarthy or go a different direction?
Yeah, I am going to stick with McCarthy. I thought about a little gamesmanship, a little strategy here, see if McCarthy can maybe fall to that 2.01, which I also have. I know you guys are not big fans, but I didn't want to risk it with the starting quarterback here at the 10th spot. So yeah, I'll stick with McCarthy just as I had last week.
Yeah, and we talked about great landing spot, not only the weapons there in Minnesota, but also the head coach, and then an opportunity to play early, whether it be in week one or push that back to the bye week or 4 or 5 weeks into the season, whatever it may be. McCarthy would not have made it to the 13th pick. He's the next guy on my board. I think he slots in perfectly at number 10. I'm wondering, Ryan, where's the tier break here? Is this it after 10? Or would you say it's after 8 or 9, or does it push even farther?
Well, I think we're talking about a couple of tiers, obviously, that we've gone through here. But I do think this tier ends with McCarthy, personally. I like some of these names coming up, but ultimately I didn't really consider taking any of them over the quarterback.
This is the spot where you could see another quarterback go, right? We could see Bo Nix go this high. We could see that next tier of wide receivers, whether it be Keon Coleman or Ladd McConkey or Ricky Pearsall. You could even see the first running back come off the board, and that may change from league to league. It could be Jonathan Brooks. It could be Jalen Wright. It could be Trey Benson. Any one of the three could really be the top running back off the board, although I'm probably higher on Wright than most still, although he got the landing spot we wanted. A week ago, it was A.D. Mitchell that went in this spot. I think it's safe to say that Mitchell's probably not going to be the guy that goes towards the end of the first round. He slipped in the NFL draft. He certainly lost some value going into the post-draft rookie drafts that we're going to see. Landing in Indianapolis isn't the worst thing, but Mitchell slid down my board. Instead, I'm going to take Ladd McConkey, who a week ago, guys, he went at the 12th spot. And I like the landing spot, although you can say what you want about that coaching staff and how Harbaugh is going to run the ball and feed his running backs, not going to focus on these wide receivers. But the Chargers picking up McConkey doesn't feel too bad to me. I certainly like his route running, his ability to get open, especially against zone coverage. He's a good run after the catch guy. That's all going to fit in well with the Chargers, that play action passing game. I can see McConkey getting free in the secondary and making big plays early and often. So he moves from 12 a week ago. Matt, you took him to end the first round, now up one spot. I'm wondering who you're going to replace him with at number 12 this week.
I'm gonna throw a running back into the first round because I feel like it fits here. I think there's a few receivers we could place here, but I'm going to go ahead and throw Jonathan Brooks here, the only running back, I believe, to get second round capital. I think the other three went in the third round on day two. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but this is a wide open spot. We have Chuba Hubbard there. We have Miles Sanders. I feel like both of those guys are going to eventually fade to the background once Brooks, we'll see what happens with his injury. He's certainly a player that I've been skeptical of. I've said that I don't want to mess with this injury. I didn't have him as my running back one pre-draft, but I think he deserves there. He belongs there now. He's landing on an offense that needs playmakers with a couple of the other receivers that they took in this year's class. They're rebuilding this entire offense. They're trying to make Bryce Young comfortable. And hopefully Jonathan Brooks will be the one that can take some load off of him and some pressure off of him in the passing game. So Brooks, I don't know how you guys feel about this one. I'm a little bit on the fence with it. I think there's two receivers in the same tier as him. But to me, he's the running back one now. And I think he fits here at the end of the first.
Yeah, he fits, no doubt. I have him at running back one. I think the draft told us to do that. He got a good enough landing spot that nobody's going to be too worried about that, right? So, landing in Carolina, getting not only day two capital, but early round two draft capital, early to mid round two draft capital, that's exactly what we look for. It's clear that there are some question marks with that leg injury, and maybe he's not on the field day one. His camp says, yeah, I'm going to be playing. It doesn't matter. He belongs fringe first round for dynasty managers in their rookie drafts, even in super flex. So I like the pick here. I had one other player above him. The first round is in the books. First five picks went exactly as they did a week ago with Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. That was followed up with Xavier Worthy, who went up three spots from a week ago, followed by Drake May and Brian Thomas, who stayed in their slots at 7 and 8. Brock Bowers dropped from 6 to 9 in this mock draft from a week ago. Then J.J. McCarthy, right back to pick 10 like he was last week. Ladd McConkey jumped up a spot. And then Jonathan Brooks was 13th a week ago, jumps up to 12 here. So not a lot of change, really. Ryan, you're on the clock at 13 overall. You're going to stick with the script here and keep it going close to the same ADP as a week ago, or are going to go off script?
Well, I picked one of the risers last week. I had Brooks in this 2.01 spot, so that makes me feel like I made a good pick there, but I can't keep that going, of course. So I'll go with Bo Nix. He was the next guy on my list. I would have taken Brooks, by the way, at the 12th spot, just like Matt did. But at 13 here, 2.01, I'll take Bo Nix. I see him as a riser. I had some questions about him going in the first round, or some doubts. Obviously he did that easily and walks into a situation where, as we've already talked about, he could be potentially the day one starter under Sean Payton. Those are things we like, even though there are things about Nix that I may not like.
So Nix went at the 2.06 a week ago. He jumps up five spots to Ryan to lead off round two. That pushes my 12th player in Superflex rankings down to 14 here. It's Ricky Pearsall, the Florida product. Certainly jumped up in my rankings after landing in San Francisco. I know he's 23 years old, and I think there are probably dynasty managers hoping maybe Ayuk moves on or maybe Debo moves on. I don't care. I'm fine with Pearsall manning the slot, moving around the formation, getting opportunities early in his career, even with those other two receivers. He jumps up seven spots from the 2.09 a week ago up to 14 overall. Matt, that puts you on the clock at 15 overall.
Yeah, I was kind of playing chicken with you guys here with Bo Nix. I almost took him at 12, was hoping he might slide to 203. And I'm going to take a player I didn't think I'd be taking in this spot. That's Keon Coleman. I haven't been shy by saying how much I do not like this player, but this landing spot is really, really good. I mean, it just is. I mean, he's going to come in. He's going to be, I don't know if he's going to be the leading receiver in year one. That's probably not going to happen. That's asking a lot from a player like Keon Coleman, but he gets the landing spot. Can he be the Ray Davis? I'm foreshadowing a pick for later in the
draft. He's tipping his hand here.
Interesting. No, I'm taking notes.
Can he be the Gabriel Davis of this offense without a primary target as Stephon Diggs there? We'll see what happens between him and the two receiver or the receiver that they signed in Curtis Samuel. You know, I don't think they're going to play the same role. It's possible that Coleman and Kincaid, the guy you guys mentioned earlier, occupy some of the same areas of the field. But I think Coleman's going to be a big touchdown threat in year one. And that's what I'm banking on here, the landing spot and some touchdown upside with Josh Allen.
I like the pick. I'm surprised you made it, Matt, because you spoke so passionately about your hatred for Keon Coleman. I love him. He's 13th in my rankings, and I want to find a way to move him up. I struggle with McConkey versus Pearsall versus Coleman. I think that the value here at the end of the first round and towards the beginning of the second round feels great. I would take Pearsall and Coleman above Bo Nix for all the reasons we talked about earlier in the show. I love the opportunity at getting potentially Keon Coleman could be an alpha receiver. He has the upside to be a top 12 dynasty wide receiver. And that just, you don't get that at 15 overall in rookie drafts. Ryan, you're up at the 2.04.
I'm going to go with Trey Benson here. He's actually a faller. Yeah, a faller based on the mock we did last week where Dan took him at 2.02. I'm getting him at 2.04 here. I don't look at him as a value faller in general, though, compared to pre-draft. I think it's more of just a couple of these guys jumping ahead of him, Coleman, Nix included. I love the spot that Benson's in there in Arizona. The Cardinals actually have an out in James Conner's contract. They could save, I believe it's about $8 million if they cut him prior to this upcoming season. So we've made it through free agency. We've made it through the draft. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if James Conner was gone from that roster even before this season begins. And obviously, if that happens, it's a big boost to Benson's value.
And it wouldn't even have to be before this season. That's the upside. But
yeah, right.
I think the writing's on the wall, right? He's not long for Arizona, certainly not in their plans beyond this year, I wouldn't anticipate. So to get the kind of draft capital that Trey Benson got, to have the opportunity to get on the field early, that's everything that we really like. And not to mention, they're one of the most run-heavy teams in the NFL. So all signs point to Trey Benson being a stud sooner or later. He's a value here at 16, certainly was next on my board. That pushes me back to the wide receiver position at the 2.05. I'm going to take Xavier Leggett, and I'm excited about this landing spot. You can say what you want about Carolina and that offense and the struggles that they had a year ago. Xavier Leggett immediately steps in with the potential to be the number one target in that offense. He got first round draft capital, has the ability to play all over the field. This feels like a great spot for Xavier Leggett. I took him in this spot a week ago and feel great picking him at 17 overall. Matt, who do you got at number 18?
I'm taking the biggest riser maybe in the whole draft. That's Jalen Polk from Washington. Ooh. Lands with the Patriots. Look, we talked about him, that he's a solid, solid possession receiver, right? And if he's going to be thrust into a wide receiver one kind of role, you know, not an NFL quote-unquote wide receiver one or a alpha wide receiver or anything like that. But for the team, and we're going to have a rookie quarterback there with Drake May. He's got two rookie receivers. I think this is probably the safer of the two, the second receiver that I'm sure is going to get taken later in the second side exercise. I'm a little bit more excited about in terms of ceiling, but Jalen Polk is just solid. And he's going to be, I think, Drake May's best friend in that offense. Besides, you know, maybe DeMario Douglas gets in there as a slot player. But in terms of outside receiver, it seems like it's going to be Jalen Polk. He got the surprise draft capital in the second round. There's only one more receiver, I think, that has not been taken yet that has gotten second round capital. So I don't know. Is this a scenario we're pushing up a player that we didn't feel as excited about, but he got the draft capital? So we're pushing him up the board. It definitely could be that. And we have the history of New England not being able to select wide receivers, but different coaching staff. We hope that turns around with Jalen Polk. So I think he's a fair pick here in the middle to late second round.
Yeah, different front office too. Different people calling shots there in New England, which is big. So I didn't see that coming, I guess. I wasn't anticipating that. I got him down a little bit lower in my rankings, but you make some good points for sure. I was going to say after that pick, I anticipated you taking somebody else. I'm sure Ryan will take that guy. There's a tier break here for me at 18, and we get to the point where it's get your favorite guy, because – everything in the second half of the second round and throughout the third round seems very similar to me. Ryan, what are your thoughts about where this tier break lands?
Yeah, I think it's right about here. There are a couple of running backs left that I like in this tier. I'm going to be taking one of them. But yeah, this does certainly feel like another tier break in the middle of the second round. I'm going to take, as I said, another running back. This is another player who's fallen based on last week's mock. But again, I like the landing spot. I'm taking Jalen Wright, the guy you were talking about earlier, Dan, probably the guy you were going to take here, actually. Jalen Wright falls three spots, does not get necessarily the draft capital that we were hoping for, but I do like the landing spot in Miami. A little bit messy, obviously, with you know, Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane, of course, there. I mean, Mostert, Jeff Wilson, those guys, as fast as they are, they could be gone from this team. This could be a Jalen Wright and Achane backfield. And I mean, we know that offense is going to make the most of their playmakers, especially those guys with speed like Jalen Wright has. So I love the landing spot for him.
And even if they don't move on from those veteran receivers, we saw Achane go down multiple times last year. Mostert hasn't been the photo of stability and health over his career. Wright's going to be the primary running back in that offense at some point, as early in this season. So I love Jalen Wright, and the fact that we can get him at 18, 19, maybe 20 overall, that feels like a big win. I'm going to dip back into running back as well, and you guys can tell me if this is a homer pick. I love the landing spot for Marshawn Lloyd. It seems like he can take over that Aaron Jones role potentially right away. I think we can forget about AJ Dillon being a big part of this offense in Green Bay. Really does feel like Marshawn Lloyd is going to be the lightning to Josh Jacobs' thunder in Green Bay. And while he may not get double digit touches early in his career, the fact that he can play a smaller role early on, fill in for an injured Jacobs, and then potentially take over down the road. Remember, Jacobs' contract says 4 years, but after 2 years, there's a wide open out where they don't owe him any money. I like the potential to get a running back to Lloyd's skill down here at the 2.08. That's value to me. Matt, who you got at the 2.09?
Gosh, Dan, I really like, you know, I like Marshawn Lloyd. I think he was my number two back before the draft. And I also obviously love the Packers. I'm really worried about this for his fantasy value. Josh Jacobs just got that big contract, and I know they're going to use both backs, but I don't know. I just, if we need something, we need him to move out of the way before Lloyd is going to realize the ceiling. I mean, that's an obvious statement, right? But I don't know. I just feel like
in your rankings, Matt, we're.
Let me pull him up.
Is he still a second rounder, or are you pushing him down into the third?
No, he's a second rounder. I think I'd probably take him more towards the 211, 212. There's a couple of guys I'd like. I think I would probably take at least one more running back above him. But it's I just think he's, I don't know, like look at how they used the running backs last year. And if he's in that quote unquote AJ Dillon role, and by the way, AJ Dillon is back, then like how much fantasy goodness is there for Marshawn Lloyd, at least in his rookie season? I went ahead and took Michael Penix here. Michael Penix Jr. at 209. We're gonna have to wait on him. I understand all of that, but you know, we the NFL is an unpredictable place. Maybe Cousins' ACL is not completely healthy or not completely recovered by week one. Maybe he misses some time. Maybe he needs a break in the middle of the season. I don't know. But the most likely scenario is we're waiting until 2026 for Michael Penix. And I don't know. I just feel like that. Look how good this draft is, you guys. We have 6 first round quarterbacks. We have a first round quarterback available at the end of the second round. We never get to talk about that. We had 14 offensive skill players go in the first round of the NFL draft. And we just passed that in terms of our rookie pick. So it just feels like a really, really solid draft class here with Penix, a first round quarterback available at the end of the second round.
Yeah, that's fair. Honestly, I think it says more about how bad the situation is for Penix than it does for how deep the class is. But certainly it's a exciting rookie class. 2.10 here. I'm going to take yet another running back. This does not fit my normal MO, but here we are. I'm going to take Blake Corum. Lots of dots connected between him and the Chargers leading up to the draft. He, of course, lands with the other LA team, the Rams, and obviously Kyren Williams, big breakout season last year, but they really have nothing after him. So even if it's just a backup situation, I like the value here in the late second. I took him in the early third round last week. So Corum here at 2.10.
Yeah, he fits in towards the end of the second round. That's a good spot for him. I'm up at the 2.11. And I'll take A.D. Mitchell, who I believe I took a week ago at the 11th pick in the first round. So while he still got second round draft capital, lands with the Colts, which I don't think anybody's really hating that. We kind of thought he could be a first round NFL pick. That didn't happen. There's questions about his health and his play and all these things. He mixes in with the receivers in Indianapolis, and that's going to push him down draft boards. I could see him, guys, going as high as maybe the early to mid, like the 2.04, 2.05. He could fall into the third round as well, depending on who's in your league and what they think about this landing spot. Clearly, the three of us think he's lost some value as he drops 12 spots from last week after landing with the Colts. Matt, finish up round two for us.
Yeah, Dan, I am worried about the landing spot with the Colts. Like, there's just so many on top of Pittman. Downs is there, Jonathan Taylor's there, and how many fantasy weapons can Anthony Richardson support? I don't know if A.D. Mitchell is going to be one of those guys that he can support. So I am worried about that landing spot. I'll take Troy Franklin here, somebody who fell quite a bit in the NFL draft. Where did he end up in the fourth round? Yeah, fourth round. So yeah, just first pick.
First pick of day three.
Yeah. So, you know, we've seen some players that in past drafts that get selected in this place that have disappointed us for fantasy. But getting him reunited with his quarterback, getting him in a place where he should be on the field, if not right away, at least pretty quickly, I think, during his rookie season, to play off of that rapport that he has with the quarterback, assuming that Nix is the day one starter there. So despite the fall in draft capital, still like the player and love that he got paired with his college quarterback.
Round two is in the books. We had some risers at the beginning, including Bo Nix, who goes up 5 spots, Ricky Pearsall, who moves up 7 spots, and Keon Coleman, who goes up 5 spots as well. Trey Benson lost a couple spots down to the 2.04, but certainly a value there. Xavier Leggett stays at the 2.05, followed by Jalen Polk, who's the biggest riser to this point, plus 11 spots for Jalen Polk up to the 2.06. Jalen Wright goes at the 7th pick in the 2nd round. Marshawn Lloyd gains a little ground at the 2.08. Then Matt took Michael Penix, who lost 6 spots from a week ago. Blake Corum, who's up 3 spots. Then A.D. Mitchell, who lost a full round. And Troy Franklin, who's down 5 picks from a week ago. We only got a few minutes, guys, so let's get through round 3. Ryan, you're on the clock.
I'll take Roman Wilson. We know that the Steelers are always going to draft a day two receiver. This time it's Roman Wilson. He'll have a chance to slot right in as a starter alongside George Pickens there.
Good pick there. I'm up at the 3.02. I'll take Malachi Corley, who's down a few spots, but certainly represents a value as far as I'm concerned. I know he didn't get great draft capital, and landing with the Jets may create some red flags, maybe some question marks there. But I really do believe in his talent and think that even though he was picked to begin the third round, first pick in the third round, I think he's a solid day two guy, and I want Malachi Corley on my teams.
Good pick. As Ryan is writing the next name into the chart, I am immediately sad. I'm going to take Jermaine Burton here, a riser, 6 spots from last week, Dan, where you took him at, or no, I took him at 3.09. Look, lands with a great quarterback, a great offense, just needs T. Higgins to move on. And we all assume that that's going to happen next season. So, yeah, Jermaine Burton, big riser.
Ryan, Matt made a mistake on that pick. Who should he be a take?
I did. I took a big mistake.
Yeah, he should have taken Ray Davis. He's talked a lot about how much he likes Davis throughout this pre-draft process. Of course, I do as well as a Kentucky Wildcat fan. I also love the landing spot for Davis. James Cook had a really, really strong year last year, but I don't think anybody looks at him as a long-term workhorse running back. So Ray Davis is going to be a perfect complement, I think, to James Cook in that Bills offense.
Excellent third round pick. This is the spot where you're getting value.
He was
an early day three guy, I think, maybe late in the fourth round, but landing in Buffalo, that seems like the perfect spot for him to get regular work. I'm up at the 3.05. I honestly think there's a small tier break right here, and we usually don't say that in round three, but I drew a line in my rankings. You guys got them all the way up to the 3.04. I'll go with Audric Estime with this pick. He ends up in Denver. I don't love taking him this high. He's 20 years old. His film's way better than his measurables and all that, those kind of things. We all know that Javonte Williams isn't the staple of health. So I could see Audric Estime getting a role early and maybe grabbing hold of it even as a fifth round pick.
I will take another player that wasn't drafted last week. That was, and that's Ben Sinnott, tight end for the Washington Commanders. Man, this is a really good landing spot, you guys. Athletic guy. He's going to be the third target, I think, in that offense behind those two receivers. Maybe even the second if Jahan Dotson can't catch up. And I think Jaden Daniels is going to love having him around.
And the best part, he got that draft capital, and they're already talking about how they're going to use him as a pass catcher. So maybe he has a little more dynasty and fantasy upside than we expected.
He's probably going to go in the second round, I think, in a lot of drafts.
Oh, okay. Ryan, who you got at the 3.07?
I'm going to stick with that running back position. I've taken a bunch of them here. Bucky Irving was a player I think we were all kind of concerned about post-combine, but he gets a nice landing spot. Really, really a similar story as to what I said with Ray Davis and James Cook. I think Bucky Irving and, help me out, guys, Tampa Bay. Rashad White. I think Bucky Irving and Rashad White could do the same thing, and we could see Irving on the field early in his career.
I completely agree. He's a nice value in the middle of the third as well. I'm going to go back to the well. Of course, I'm a Badgers fan. I'll go with Braylon Allen, who has to play behind a superstar running back. He landed with the Jets, didn't get great draft capital. I still like the player, and to get him late in the third, that's just fine with me. Matt?
Man, I think I know we're running out of time here, but I really don't understand what the Jets are doing with Allen and Isaiah Davis. Like, what are they going to do with Abana Kanda? Like, what are they going to do with Braylon Allen? Is he going to come in and just steal touchdowns? Like, he's not. I mean, Breece Hall is very good at the goal line. I don't know what they're doing. We're going to do with Braylon Allen. I'm going to take Javon Baker here, the other New England receiver.
Sweet. Ryan, you're up in the 310.
I'm going to keep with the theme of trying to steal your all's favorite players. I'll take Tyrone Tracy here.
Yeah, I should have taken him instead of Braylon Allen, but I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I would have let Allen keep sliding, so you could have gotten him a little later. Tyrone Tracy, day three running back, ends up with the Giants, and we talked about him a few weeks ago. Can do a lot as a pass catcher, former wide receiver in college. So excited to see how he's used, and honestly, hopefully he's used correctly with the Giants.
Oh, I want to get him in every league. He's got an opportunity and could really grab hold of that opportunity in New York. He's the perfect fit, honestly. I'm going to go to the running back position as well and take a guy that wasn't drafted a week ago. It's Kamani Vidal.
I knew it.
Relatively new to me, guys. I didn't discover him until last week, honestly. And I was standing in the airport waiting for Matt, just drooling over Kamani Vidal videos. Matt, I had to go inside and use the restroom. So, and then I wait for the guys to come around. So I spent a lot of time watching him. So, I'm very excited about his upside. Love the landing spot as well. If you haven't watched Vidal, do it. And then realize he's with the Chargers, who love to run the rock.
Yeah. I mean, once Gus Edwards is out of the way, I mean, he's the next guy. I mean, we talked about, Isaiah Spiller is a sleeper. I think that is completely dead. We also got J.K. Dobbins signing there. So Vidal is very fun. I'm going to take the last quarterback here, Spencer Rattler at the 312, lands with New Orleans Saints. Carr has a big contract, but Rattler will have some time to sit and develop. And speaking of which, this is a little bit non sequitur, but I just forgot the name. Who is their second receiver that survived the draft? Rashid Shaheed. Jesus. Oh my gosh. We all have too many. We've looked at too many rookies over the past 6 months, you guys. Yeah. Anyway, he survived and is going to be very exciting. Wide receiver two in fantasy, or not wide receiver, fantasy wide receiver two, but a wide receiver two. Anyway, Spencer Rattler is the pick here. And, I guess that's it, Dan. We did it.
Yeah, that's it. But the fourth round would have been fun. We didn't get Devontae Walker. We didn't talk about Jalen McMillan or Will Shipley. Luke McCaffrey is a draftable guy now. Isaac Garendo has some upside still. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on. The guys who didn't get drafted from a week ago, like JT Sanders, didn't get drafted. He lost a lot of value. Ryan, you're not surprised about that, I'm sure.
No, I was kind of worried heading in on Sanders, but yeah, some interesting names. You said a lot of them there. Malik Washington, we're already hearing some hype from Miami on him. Even if you've got a fourth rounder, we're feeling pretty good about those picks.
Yeah, I wouldn't be throwing away fourth round draft picks, late thirds, those kind of things. There's the chance that this year we end up picking somebody at 36 or 39 or 43 overall. that ends up being a player and scoring fantasy points for us. As I said in the lead, we are talking veterans next week. What veterans lost value because of these rookies? Which ones gained a bunch of value because they didn't get a rookie or got a quarterback that they needed or something like that? We're going to focus on that a week from now. For Matt, for Ryan, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening to this episode of the DLF Dynasty Podcast. We'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Please remember to rate and review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.